जय।
श्री गिरिजी
जय।
श्री चेतन महाप्रभु की
जय।
सब कीर्तन यज्ञ की
Yatra Sneha Sapta
Distinguished by lovely moist corners, defeated the beauty of lotus flowers. Her face was surrounded by dark, curling tresses. Purport. According to Vedic culture, white teeth are very much appreciated. Devahuti's white teeth increased the beauty of her face and made it look like a lotus flower. When the face was very attractive, the eyes are generally compared to lotus petals and the face to a lotus flower. So that's verse 32 and 33, and again I'll read 34. Yadasa smile the shanam shida dayatapatir. Tatakta chacha space of us sleep here. Yatra space of the jati. When she followed her great husband, the best of the sages, Kavaramuni, who was very dear to her, she, along with all the maidservants, and once appeared where he was. Namaste, Saraswati Deve, Gaurava Acharya, Nirvisheshashudhyayi Astacharya Acharya. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhujananda, Sri Adhikaradha Shivasri Gaurava Vrinda, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vajrapur is happy, the city of the age. Brihara Bhavi, your Shadeva, the Moda. Vajrapur, the Moda. Hare Krishna. Yes, well, we did read through verse 32 actually before and did even a little research into the subject of auspicious and inauspicious, which was the name, other than just the sort of the theme of looking nice, beautiful and nicely decorated and all. That struck me as being from a philosophical or just in a direct Krishna conscious sense, the most important thing. So actually we will say a few words about that, but now we're in these other verses. White teeth are very much appreciated. Not only in the Vedic culture. So what? Black or brown teeth or whatever, multicolored, are not appreciated. We were in what is now Namibia back in 1984 or something. Yeah, 1984. And there are people who, I forget which sort of ethnic group they're from, but one of the groups there, there's a practice amongst, I think it's more than men, to file their teeth, or some of their teeth, to points, you know, like directly down to a point. And we're trying to, anyway, you know, just, you go to different places, people have different habits and practices and traditions and so on. But that appeared to be there in that part of the world. And we didn't really think much of it. It was just, you know, it's just their thing. So it's not just some group of us or people there. But somehow we ended up asking some local person, what is it all about? And according to that person, I do not know who that was, at least that person said that, yeah, it means they're cannibals. Krishna. And then not long after that, well, actually a few years after that, I was in Holland or Belgium. I think Holland, actually. And you know how on buses they have advertisements for whatever, all sorts of things. So this one bus came past with an advertisement for some child's charitable organization, you know, running it safe for children or that sort of thing. And so on the side, right along the side of us, were all these photographs of these happy, smiling little children of different varieties, you know, different nationalities and so on. And one of them was a child with a big smile. And from that group, as his teeth filed to points. Not all the teeth, it's more like the canine and so on. You know, that sort of just a little on the side there. And I thought, yes, save the cannibals. Well, what can you say? But yeah, white teeth are very much appreciated, of course. And, you know, all these nice descriptions of looking nice. And it's all very nice. And of course, we should try to look nice. We don't want to look like, you know, too kind of bohemian. Yeah, or cultureless, or acultural, or something like that. So, particularly, I had looked at this verse 32, in which Prabhupada, in the purport, focuses on auspicious things which we use in the bathing, actually. Of course, gold is also auspicious. Auspicious and inauspicious is a very interesting, and it can become a very complex subject in Vedic culture. In our literatures, where auspicious and inauspicious, the main place, as I recall, where it's discussed, is chapter 14 of the first canto, which is the chapter entitled The Disappearance of Lord Krishna. And it doesn't actually discuss the disappearance as such. That's at the end of the 11th canto. But it does describe the reaction, not just the reaction, but what happened in Hastinapur. What Maharaj Yudhisthira observed happening in terms of different, well, just different happenings. Sun in the sky, and some just amongst people, and some amongst animals, and you know, some weather phenomena, and different things like that, which were very inauspicious. Shri, Shri, Radha, Radha, Shri, Shri, Radha, Radha, Shri, Shri, Radha, Radha. Yeah, that's very auspicious. Just at the right time. Hare Krishna. Thank you. And it brought to mind, you know, I was looking through the chapter, and in fact, we'll just note a couple of things from there. Auspicious, and you know, well, it was mainly inauspicious. And then Arjuna returned from Dwarka. He had been there when the Lord actually disappeared. And then he explained that. But what I saw, I heard, actually. In fact, I had been taught by His Holiness Sivananda Swami, who, you know, he's pretty knowledgeable devotees brought up in India, in a cultured family. And so he had told me that then I read, just a matter of, it might be one, between 1 or 2 weeks ago, Srila Prabhupada said, someone offered Prabhupada something, or some things, a few of a particular item, I can't remember what it was. But Prabhupada said, do not offer three. Which is what Siddhartha Raj told me. Do not offer three. He said, if you offer three to enemies, I did it then. And I was trying to look it up to actually read it rather than just talk about it right now, but I couldn't find it. But yeah, that's interesting. You offer three to enemies. Hare Krishna. So, think about it. Auspicious and inauspicious. And Subhadra Maharaj told me this some years ago. It was in Mayapur, and he told me how he and two other devotees went on, like, doing collecting funds to some business person's house. And so it's three of them, and they were not, I don't know if he already knew about it or didn't know about it, but the others were foreigners, they didn't know about such things. They knocked on the door. The man opened the door of the house and saw three, and he didn't say a word. He just closed the door. Yeah, and they got a bit shocked. So anyway, they came back some days later. Well, they found out about it. And two of them came back later. Some days later. And knocked on the door. And he opened the door. And he didn't say anything. Like, oh, okay. Now he's just so good. He didn't say anything. He just said, come in. And they came in. And they collected some donations. And there was no discussion about what had happened. Yeah. It was like the man had taken it to be understood. So, okay. Auspicious and inauspicious. You know, there are many considerations of auspicious and inauspicious in the sense of omens. Because we don't want to get too much into this sort of thing, but in Hinduism, auspicious and inauspicious, at least among some people, is extremely important. The auspicious day, the auspicious time of the day. Like, for many people, doing Govardhan Parikrama is very important. If you go there on an Ekadasi, or particularly on a Purnima, but there's loads of people, but particularly on, one of the Kartik Purnimas, And most especially on the Purushottam Purnima. Oh, there's so many people. It's just hundreds of thousands. It may be millions going around. It's really a lot. But other days, like the day after Kartik Purnima, or 2 days after Kartik Purnima, in the Katyayani month, you can sit there for 5 minutes and you won't see a person go by. Yeah. And it's not just because it was Saturday or Sunday and people are free, although that also is sometimes a consideration, but it's auspicious and inauspicious. And to do it during the Purnima, because the Purnima doesn't just mean, you know, from from 1 minute past midnight till the next midnight. It's like from whatever time the moon rises to the time the moon sets. And we actually have in Vrindavan, we have a house, and we have one Bengali devotee who's been with us for 20 years or so. And he only goes at the time. He doesn't just go on Purnima. If the Purnima officially starts like 7 o'clock, he'll be there 7 o'clock. So these considerations in the minds of many people are of paramount importance, extreme importance. And so they observe different functions in those terms. And then I was reading, this morning I was reading, Srila Prabhupada was saying that, yes, on the material level, there's auspicious and inauspicious, but from the Krishna conscious point of view, everything material is inauspicious. Everything material is inauspicious. And the only thing which is auspicious is Krishna consciousness. And of course, within the context of Krishna consciousness, some things are auspicious and some things are inauspicious. Like cleanliness is auspicious. Uncleanliness is inauspicious. And it's not just a matter, you know, sometimes people take auspicious and inauspicious to be more like superstition. You know, the black cat walks across the road in front of you. I was in a car once in Russia where people, at least quite a lot of people, are very superstitious. Well, the old sort of mystical culture is very prominent. And so we were driving through this village and a black cat ran across the road. The driver stopped. I didn't see him, none of us said anything. He just stopped, turned the car around 360 degrees, and carried on. And then, would you believe, a second black cat ran across the road, and he did the same thing. And then a third black cat ran across the road, and he did the same thing. Didn't say a word, and just carried on. And not long after, like 6 months, some several months, it might be the beginning, a disaster happened in that village. Sure. So a lot of people think it's just superstition. But, you know, you can understand in very simple practical terms. Dirty, clean. You can understand. It's not hard to understand at all. I mean, at least with devotees. Clean is auspicious in actual objective terms. As a practical reality, you become fragrant when you get up in the morning. You know, of course, you're refreshed, hopefully, from you know, whatever you did the day before, and you feel refreshed. But still, it's a fact, the body is quite unclean, and there's, you know, quite a bit of ignorance hanging around. But then you take a nice bath, and if you do take a nice bath, and put on clean clothes, then you can feel the auspiciousness. It's just, everything is much more noticeable, noticeably nice. So it's not a superstition. It's a practical objective reality. And whereas so many people, when they get up, they don't take a bath. I think in, you know, just non-devotee society, is it a practice to take a bath? Maybe most Indian people. But I don't think about the terms. And I don't know about the African culture that's really. Okay. Anyway, let's not get into that too much. But, you know, like having by force of circumstances, or maybe by desire, I don't know, had to frequent numerous airports around the world, I can tell you where to go, where's the good place where you can find a quiet spot in many airports. I observed, having had to use the public toilets on numerous occasions, I observed, and I was actually sort of looking for it after a while. What are these people going to do now, having used the toilet? And some of them wash their hands nicely. Many of them don't. They just walk out the door. And it's almost, it's a little inconceivable actually. But are they not aware? Do they not feel the difference? And what to speak of the implications, you know, contaminated hands, and then you're going to be handling all sorts of different things. What if you just go and handle some food? Hurry on. It's just not nice. It's inauspicious. But then it's not a superstition. It's a practical reality. I was reading in chapter 14, that chapter of the first canto, how Maharaj Yudhisthira in Hastinapura suddenly was observing. It was just, it just happened one day or one night or one time. Suddenly, all these things started happening. And he noticed, for example, he noticed that suddenly interpersonal interactions suddenly became worse. Yeah. Because the Lord had disappeared, and when the Lord disappears, at that moment, Kali Yuga begins. And you know, of course it gets worse and worse as time goes on. But immediately, at least according, it seems, to Maharaj Yudhisthira's description, it was like immediately social interactions started changing for the worse. To his surprise, it was like, what happened here? And all sorts of extraordinary things. If you don't mind, let me just have a look there. And we can remind you all a bit, because it really is quite something. Yeah, just bear with me for a second. Well, in terms of the interpersonal reaction, Maharaj Yudhisthira noticed, he saw that the direction of time, of eternal time, had changed. And this was very fearful. There were disruptions in the seasonal regularities. And it's over a period of a few months. A few months passed, and Judah didn't return. Maharaj Yudhisthira then began to observe some inauspicious omens. So it was over a little, not a lot of time, because Arjuna left, and he went all the way to Dwarka. It takes a while in those days. And then, after however long, he noticed a change, or changes, that the season, the changes of seasonal regulations. Yeah. I even remember here, I think I remember, when I first came, there was a rainy season. It was the summer, and the winter was the dry season. It's not quite like that now. In India it's also, you know, it's something like that, but it's not like that. It gets all messed up. It's coming in now. So we notice, just over a period of a short time, at the most a few months, he noticed that people in general had become very greedy, angry, and deceitful. He saw they were adopting foul means of livelihood. All this inauspiciousness was just starting to saturate the atmosphere. And all ordinary transactions and dealings became polluted with cheating. Yeah. Even between friends. And in familial affairs, there was always understanding between fathers, mothers, and sons, between well-wishers and brothers. Even between husband and wife, there was always strain and quarrel. You know, sometimes that's one thing, but always that's another thing. So he noticed all this, and he spoke to Veena, yeah. And he says, well, actually, 7 months since he departed, 7 months have passed, yet he hasn't returned. And he starts to sort of speculate, has maybe Krishna disappeared? And then he points out certain other things. The left side of my body, my thighs, arms, and ears are all quivering again and again. For men, this is inauspicious. For women, it is auspicious. There's talk in Prabhupada's books. Sometimes Radharani's body, the left side, quivers, and she feels it to be auspicious. But amongst men, the left side is inauspicious. The dog barks at me fearlessly. And he should have gone on. You know, when the devotees used to go door to door in Chatsworth, they used to call it dog to dog sanctuary. So many houses had dogs, and they would all bark. It's all coming in. Now, useful animals like cows are passing me on the left side. Yeah. And lower animals like the asses are circumambulating me. These all inauspicious omens. Like the various things he talks about. You know, I've even had experience in Vrindavan particularly, just not on many occasions, but on some. Of some people, we're walking in the street, there's no one around, few people around, and some sergeant is coming the other way, and he sees me or us, our little group, whatever, coming towards it, and then he either, in some cases, they make a point of passing us with their left side to us, because they regard us as inauspicious, ungrateful, foreigners, the dirty foreigners. But in other cases I've seen, they make a point of passing them with the right side to us, means they take us to be auspicious. Auspicious and inauspicious. You know, we could do a little seminar on omens. And, you know, what to watch out for. It is a fact that Srila Prabhupada, to some degree, observed auspicious and inauspicious. It's actually a fact that his servants would say, Prabhupada did not like to travel on a carousel. Prabhupada did not like to travel on Thursdays. Either Harry Story, it must be Harry Story probably, that Prabhupada, it seemed he was going to, but he had to travel on a Thursday. Sometimes he would get the servants to pack the bags on Wednesday, and Wednesday night put the bags outside the door. That means you're already in transit. You're already there, although your body is still in the room. Yeah, it's an auspicious consideration. You know, when Prabhupada was in his disappearance pastimes, he at least one time asked for an astrological reading from some astrologer who he knew and who he regarded as being fairly authoritative and notified. So, yeah. And he got, at least one time, just in the last couple of weeks when he was bedridden in Vrindavan, at least one time he had a reading taken, and with recommendations, do this, don't do that, in terms of, you know, the stars and the heavenly whatever up there. So you would observe it for a while and then stop observing it. So, you know, it was there to some degree, but it wasn't really, like, these weren't serious considerations. Even Prabhupada, some doctor, he asked for some super doctor, a doctor from the Gopinath Bazaar, to come and do some Ayurvedic things. And the doctor gave some dietary recommendations. Eat this, don't eat that. You know, as they do. And the devotees were following that for a couple of days. And then one day, in a moment, is physically incapacitated quite severely. And one day, they brought, you know, it's all this like super health stuff. Boiled, steamed, or uncooked, or whatever, you know. No oil, no oil. all this. And, yeah, because they're very sincerely concerned to try to help Srila Prabhupada in terms of his health. And Prabhupada had asked for this person to come. And so they thought, yes, Prabhupada must be behind this. Then after just a couple of days, Prabhupada asked for, I can't even remember exactly, you know the story? He asked for something like samosa or Kachori. Something fried. And the devotee, I think the lady, anyway, the devotee who was presenting the prasada at lunchtime to Prabhupada, she sort of protested that, oh, sure, Prabhupada, you know, the doctor said and all this. And Prabhupada said something to the effect that if we cannot eat that nicely, why should we live? So really, auspicious means Krishna conscious. But in Krishna consciousness, of course, there are natural standards like cleanliness we mentioned. There are natural dietary standards. Prabhupada would allow a feast on Sundays and festival days. But otherwise, the devotees should be simple. Vedic, but simple. Yeah. Not every day a feast. Prabhupada said that we should feed Krishna like he's a young boy. You know, he can eat anything. Rich things. But not for the general devotees. It will be detrimental. So it's auspicious and inauspicious, but in very practical terms. Yeah. So here there are all these different things, you know. What to use certain oils, mustard seed oil before you take, or turmeric mixed with mustard oil. Have it smeared all over your body before you take a bath, because it's auspicious. I don't know, I've never used these things, but it's not just auspicious, it's good for the health. And that is as auspicious, to have good health, so you can engage in Krishna consciousness. I read Siddhartha Goswami in Hari Bhakti Das. He says, when you are chanting japa on your beads, then you must, when you go from one bead to the next, you must pull the beads towards you, not push them away from you. How's that? You understand what I mean? Yeah. Because it's inauspicious to push them away from you. This is Siddhartha Goswami. One devotee asked Prabhupada, why? We are told we must not pick Tulsi on Dwadasi. Why? In Hari Bhakti Vilas, which is written by Siddhartha Goswami, there is an instruction we must not pick Tulsi on Dwadasi. Why? And Prabhupada answered, because Siddhartha Goswami said so. A straight answer. There's probably some subtle considerations there. There must be, one would assume there must be. Siddhartha Goswami, you know, he's an expert on auspicious and inauspicious. So at least in our devotional service, it's very auspicious, it's totally auspicious to get up early in the morning, take a nice bath, put on clean clothes, come to Mangalarati, Hari Bol, come to Mangalarati, and stay for the morning program as much as possible, you know, in terms of your duties and any other important considerations. That's auspicious. And you'll feel the auspiciousness. And to chant Hare Krishna attentively, that's auspicious. And you feel the difference compared to if you don't chant attentively, if your mind just wanders off into whatever. in a place, other place, as it is prone to do, then you can feel the inauspiciousness. You can feel it. Because at least in Krishna consciousness, these points which are emphasized, do this but don't do that, because they are objectively beneficial or not beneficial, actually. It's not just some superstition. Yeah, not just some superstition. Like one lady came here to the temple many years ago. I don't know if you were here. I won't mention the name. Like it was about maybe 8:30 in the morning. She came to sitting in her shower from a very staunch and very nice devotee family with a big watermelon. And she said, "I had a dream. Krishna told me I was offering him a watermelon before 9 o'clock. Otherwise I must divorce my husband." were you around? I'm serious. So we said, "Well, okay, it's nice to offer a watermelon. That's a really good idea. Krishna will be very happy. So we can offer a watermelon. Maybe we, I'm not sure at what time, but yeah, we can offer a watermelon. But look, this whole thing, possibly divorce your husband, we don't think it's really valid because he is a twice initiated, very responsible and nice devotee. A really nice devotee. And problems between husband and wife, may happen sometimes, but divorce, to go to that point. Go that far. Because it's not authoritative. It's superstition. It was actually superstition. So, we in our practice of Krishna consciousness, we should try and understand very clearly what in Krishna consciousness is auspicious and inauspicious. Because they are very real considerations, like we mentioned. Getting up for the morning program as one example, and there's so many others. Reading Prabhupada's books. This is auspicious. Transcendentally, and so many others. Preaching Krishna consciousness. And we should try and figure out, organize our lives, our programs in such ways that we maximize the auspicious, really positive Krishna conscious activity, and we avoid the inauspicious, like offenses, for example. So that's something we can take from here. Otherwise, white teeth are very much appreciated. I have some tooth whitener, actually, but I think my teeth are sort of beyond it now. But it's a good idea to have white teeth and to be clean. And I don't know, maybe use some oil before you bathe. Frankly, I've never done it, not one time in my life. But maybe Maharaj was talking about it yesterday. Maybe it will help. Yeah. In this way, we can make our lives fully auspicious and prepare for going back to Godhead, which is the ultimate auspiciousness. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Maharaj, comment. Yes.
Marriage is taken as an auspicious water.
Okay.
Very much better. If you get married, you are getting married in Malaniya, Tirupati. There is no hotel. There is Mangala Bhavana, Mangala Bhavana. They are not in there, they are auspicious. All inauspicious are destroyed. So, there, that is essentially according to your choice. Whatever the 10 days is suitable for you, go and do that time for the puja and the time. So, anything in relation to Krishna consciousness is always auspicious.
Hare Krishna. Thank you.
You know, we hear sometimes in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks about renouncing both auspicious and inauspicious activities, and that person is dear to him. Dear to him. What does that really refer to?
Okay. Here's the question. That in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna does talk about renouncing auspicious and inauspicious things, and then you become dear to them. That's
the 12th chapter.
Yeah, the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, second half. Yeah, so what he's talking about is all these, you know, like karma, can be auspicious and inauspicious considerations. Yeah. Which may to some degree overlap into Krishna consciousness, at least in the minds of some devotees. I was going to say we've been brought up in that way, but maybe not just here. You know, some of our devotees have adopted from other cultures, have adopted elements of the culture outside of, you know, like sort of the strict boundaries of Krishna consciousness. But it's like, you know, there's certainly different rituals, auspicious rituals in Karnakandia. When I was a young devotee, I was told, there's another one of these, you know, Papa says, and I only heard it at that time, but I can actually understand it in practical terms, that the procedure according to strict kind of Indian standards of auspicious and inauspicious, when you get up early in the morning and you must offer, you must get up, you must, first of all, you should have slept facing a certain direction. Then you must get up, and there's a whole procedure to getting up. And you have to bow down in this way and that in a few ways. And the certain prayers for a few different personalities. And then you've got to, you know, get mantras for brushing your teeth and ways of doing all the things that get done. You have it. And that whole program. And at least I was told that Srila Prabhupada said that because it's kind of different, we're a bit on the slow side, or something like that. Then, so we were told, the young devotees were told, that if we followed all the rules and regulations of Karmakandia for getting up, by the time we had got up and done everything and now got our clothes on and we're just ready for the day, it would be time to take rest of the night. Yeah. So, there are all these types of considerations like, you know, I mentioned doing the Devadatta Prakram, many people, they're only Devadatta Prakram. You can invite them any other time, but no, don't be Purnima. So it's Purnima, it's not the Devadatta Prakram. Yeah. It's a consideration of sort of, you know, at this mix, auspiciousness. Because Govinda, you know, as far as I'm concerned, Govardhan is at its most auspicious when there's no one there. And you can just, you know, take your time and spend some time here and there. Yeah. And when it's like, and some of these people may literally run, And many of them walk fast. They hear these people, now don't go to that curriculum on busy days and get sort of bumped and pushed and looked at if you're going slowly. So there are all these considerations. At a certain time you must do this. In a certain place at a certain time you must do that. And so it's all these types of considerations. Yeah. There is one that if you, where is it now? Or it's on, anyway, you know the one. If you give a set of Srimad Bhagavatam on,
it's the mantra.
Mantra Purnima, situated on a gold throne, you go back to Godhead. You know, I don't know the day before or the day after how it works. But our devotees are trying to sort of optimize and maximize that. Because, you know, we serve people. Anyway, it's a nice thought. But it's actually accepted, I would say. It's definitely stated, it's quoted. Jiva Goswami quotes it on a number of occasions in the Sannyasas and encourages it. Yeah. But then there are all sorts of other considerations which on the surface of it, they're kind of that nature. Auspicious. And this is what this Krishna is referring to.
But then how did, because as we read, you know, the literature, learn about Vedic cultures, we're going to find so many auspicious things, inauspicious things that are prescribed and unprescribed. So, you know, how should we sort of, what mechanism should we use to filter out what's essential, what's not essential, so we don't become carried away or something, in some cases too averse, like when we hear, don't travel on Thursday, you know, because Prabhupada, you know, so we can become averse to it, that's mundane. So how do we, like, filter out the necessary, filter out the unnecessary and keep the essence?
Well, you know, okay, so the question is, when we read the literatures and explore the culture of it, then we will just inevitably come across all sorts of auspicious and inauspicious considerations. So how do we, what do we do and what do we not do from amongst them? How do we filter, what filtering process should we use? Well, the first is, and definitely the most important, we should try to understand, or we should not just try, but we should find out what Prabhupada said. Yeah, that's really important. And even like the Thursday thing, I've heard it from a number of devotees, including actual assistants of Prabhupada. But then Prabhupada did travel on the coasts sometimes. And he did travel on Thursdays sometimes. You know, where possible, he avoided it. Where possible, he avoided it. Yeah. So, it's sort of like, you know what it's like? Until what times should we fast on the different appearance days? Yeah. And, you know, a while ago, there was such a controversy about Ramnavami. Yeah, about Ramnavami. Because Prabhupada said, it's just clear, he said, fast till moonrise. He said it. It's recorded, it's there. But he himself, on some occasions, didn't do it. So, it was sort of our Shastric Advisory Committee. They worked in a whole paper, 20 pages, just analyzing it. And their conclusion is, you know, it's kind of up to you, but you can do it at midday.
Yeah.
Particularly if it's practical for preaching, you can do it at midday. Yeah. So that's the first thing we've got to do. That's the first thing we've got to do. And beyond that, you know, many devotees will say, we don't need to bother. Just keep Prabhupada's standards. And certainly it's a pretty good idea, because as soon as you start going out into the, just the going about, what to speak of the other genes, what to speak of the non, the few people who are not at all following Lord Chaitanya, oh, it gets confusing. And we, along with being on the slow side, we're on the easy to become confused side too. So, you know, as much as possible, my advice would be that research should be researched in terms of what Prabhupada said, and then follow that. What do you think? Got any other suggestions? Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Sorry, I did that so long.